While the presence of fentanyl is putting more people at risk for overdose, the good news is death from overdose can be prevented if we recognize the signs and act quickly. Joining us is Daniel Rodriguez, Director of Substance Use Disorder and Outreach Programs at Duffy Health. Great to have you back. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you so much, Mindy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what trends are we seeing in overdoses on the Cape and Islands? And are the number of fatal overdoses rising or falling, or do we know?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And I'm thinking that kind of a broader Commonwealth approach and kind of bringing it back to obviously Cape and the Islands is a really great way to kind of look at our trends. So at the end of the day, overdoses in Massachusetts, including Cape and Islands, continues to be a major concern for our community. Since 2012, overdose fatalities in the Commonwealth have continued to increase. In 2016, we saw a spike in those fatalities, and last year was kind of the crescendo in 2022, where approximately 2,359 persons were lost to overdose in the Commonwealth, 87 of those being residents of Barnstable County, 6 of Dukes, and 2 from Nantucket. So as you can see, you know, it continues to be a major issue here on Cape and Islands. What we have heard from the community, primarily individuals with lived experience, is that use patterns have changed in the past few years, resulting in increased vulnerability due to the fact that post-COVID isolation, you know, not having access to individuals around you who you may feel safe using with, you know, definitely got shook up with the pandemic. And statistically, we do know that males continue to be overrepresented in overdose fatalities. Approximately 75% of overdoses are white, non-Hispanic males. But since 2020, we have also seen a pretty dramatic increase in our BIPOC communities, specifically our Black and Indigenous communities in Massachusetts. Mm. So, you know, what does that mean for us? You know, we are aware that increases in overdose fatalities continue to rise. But what has been additionally problematic is that substances that have historically not been opioid based are starting to be kind of laced or tampered with in a way that creates overdose potential for, again, substances that don't usually have an overdose potential. Those have included cocaine and other non-opioid pills, which sadly are not kind of your pick up from a pharmacy pills, like many individuals think that they are, but they're being pressed and fabricated, just like the synthetic opioids. But with that, we also do know that the landscape of overdose is also changing. We have really great data on overdose fatalities, but overdose response as a larger community is something that we don't quite have our finger on, just because a lot of harm reduction and overdose reversal tools are being used by the general community, and those statistics aren't always being reported on.
Yeah.
But that being said, exciting news is that in 2023, we have some preliminary data, and it's showing that we're tracking at about 11% decrease in the Commonwealth, which is really exciting for our communities.
Yeah. You brought up an interesting point. Last week, we had a roundtable of police chiefs on, and I think it was the police chief on Nantucket who was talking about Narcan and it being used a lot with, you know, just not necessarily reported. So those overdose numbers can be really tricky sometimes because we're not keeping those statistics, right? So it's hard to say.
Correct, Mindy. And I think that, you know, there's two things that we've looked at as treatment providers historically. One is, as first responders do arrive, again, how many doses of Narcan are they providing? That in itself, if someone has a cardiac arrest, they may be given a dose of Narcan just as a preventative measure to rule everything out. So again, that gets collected in some ways. But I think what is most importantly and beautiful about access to these life-saving tools is that, again, the general community has access to it and has the ability to use these interventions. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of folks who are in their active use, they may not be seeking immediate acute medical care post, because they have kind of been, you know, revived or reversed from that overdose.
Yeah. Do we typically see a rise in number of overdoses in the summer season as we see the population increase?
So, you know, looking at what we know for statistics, I would say that overall it's pretty steady state. I think that we tend to see that in the summer, the kind of drug culture shifts a little bit for our non-residents. We know that the primary calls coming in for EMS and first responders actually is more alcohol related. But I think what knowing that, again, we have substances laced that aren't historically opioids, for the folks that are coming to Cape and the Islands, oftentimes may be coming with some of those drugs and medications to help kind of support a more social environment, right? So for individuals who may be using cocaine or other stimulants, they may not be aware that that substance, again, has an overdose potential. So I would say that we're not seeing marketable increases in overdoses over the summer months, but I would say that risk potential definitely
Yeah.
increases.
So how does the region, including first responders and healthcare providers, prepare for the increase in people and potentially the increase in overdose, or as you mentioned alcohol as well?
Yeah, so in my professional opinion, I believe that our region providers and community can prepare for the summer in a few different ways. Truly, the first is to understand the trends in the drug supply on Cape Cod during the summer and how to respond to some of those intricacies. Again, we may not be looking for individuals who have a history of opioid use disorder, but someone who may be using like a social drug or maybe an infrequent user, and ensuring that those individuals not only have education around risks associated with that use, but again, their surrounding community, colleagues, friends, loved ones have tools such as Narcan and fentanyl test strips to be able to have that available if there is a negative outcome related to that use. Additionally, I think for the larger community, again, an understanding of what Narcan is and how to use fentanyl test strips. I think education is key. And even hearing the conversation earlier about the Stop the Bleed initiative, I think in a lot of ways, reversal tools and strategies such as Narcan need to be a part of our general curriculum, just like CPR, because you never know where, when, how you may come upon someone who is experiencing an opioid overdose.
Now, I'm going to get into that, but first I want to ask you about the how common is fentanyl and in what substances is it showing up?
Yeah, so I have a saying. It may not be the best saying in the world, but in my mind, there is no such thing as heroin anymore. So for individuals who are actively using a synthetic opioid, they are very well aware that there is no heroin. Everything that they are using is fentanyl. We have that data from not only the drug testing agencies in Massachusetts, but also Street Check, which does kind of in real time drug testing in certain communities. And we know, again, fentanyl is king when it comes to the opioid world. Again, looking at our problematic areas, medication, sorry, drugs such as cocaine, pressed pills, stimulants, benzodiazepines that folks are purchasing from the community, that is where we are seeing kind of an increase in, again, lacing of those. And it really depends on the season, the time, because we know that the contamination of those batches really ebbs and flows, with no particular pattern.
And when you say laced, it's laced with fentanyl.
Correct. Yeah,
Yeah,
laced
yeah,
with fentanyl,
yeah.
and again, not something that that person would be expecting
Right.
to have in that substance.
All right, you mentioned fentanyl test strips. I had not heard of this before, so tell me about this. Are they widely available and used on the Cape and Islands?
Yes. Yeah, so two parts to this answer. Fentanyl test strips, in my mind, I kind of call them the pregnancy test of the fentanyl world, right? So it's a very user-friendly tool that comes in a prepackaged, a unit that comes with an instruction packet as well on how to use it. What they are used for is to again test substances to understand whether or not fentanyl is in that substance. And again, it's less used for folks who are using opioids because there is an understanding that that substance is completely fentanyl, and is being really used as a tool for other substances to reduce that overdose potential. Across Cape Cod, there are a multitude of different organizations and agencies that are providing access to these tools, including our local overdose education and naloxone distribution program, AIDS Support Group of Cape Cod, as well as other organizations such as Duffy Health Center, One Shared Spirit, and more. And also, Massachusetts has worked really hard to get this tool into the hands of the general community. So, even on Massachusetts's Health Promotion Clearinghouse online, you can order them for free.
Hmm.
And they are a resource that is really helpful for our community.
Yeah. And how is Narcan distributed and available in the community? And is there evidence that it's being used by people other than first responders to prevent fatalities?
Yes, so I'll start with the evidence of being of use by non-providers and first responders. The answer is resoundingly yes. It's actually been one of the most important parts of our work is ensuring that we are providing access to everyone and anyone who may be around someone who is active in their use or could potentially stumble upon someone who is experiencing an overdose. We do know that Narcan is being used far, far deeper in the community than we have statistical knowledge of. That being said, really access to Narcan, it's easy to attain here on Cape. One, any pharmacy has that. Depending on your insurance or what you may be kind of coming into the pharmacy with, there may be a cost for that that tool. But other organizations, again, such as AIDS Support Group of Cape Cod, One Shared Spirit, Yarmouth, Substance Awareness Committee, Duffy Health Center, and beyond, provide free access to Narcan as well as training for on how to use that, how to respond to an overdose.
Do you know if towns are stocking, beach staff with Narcan?
So if I was to take a shot at that, I would probably say no.
Hmm.
Again, that's just an assumption. I will say that a few towns have worked really hard to provide access to Narcan in their municipal buildings. So I know that Falmouth has been working really closely with ASGCC to integrate Naloxone boxes into their municipal buildings where someone can walk up and access Narcan, as well as other communities such as Mashpee Bourne, who have really worked hard on that as well. And I do know that a lot of first responders are also providing education to families on where they can connect with an organization who can get them immediate access to Narcan as well.
We're talking about preventing overdose, and if one does happen, steps bystanders can take to keep it from being fatal. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about preventing overdose, and if one does happen, steps bystanders can take to keep it from being fatal. With us is Daniel Rodriguez. He's Director of Substance Use Disorder and Outreach Programs at Duffy Health. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to join our conversation, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Are there trainings for service workers, in restaurants and hotels on how to recognize overdose and what to do? We have bartenders trained in, the alcohol aspect of things. What about overdose?
Yes. So actually, Barnstable County a few years back was working towards an initiative to provide greater access to these trainings for our individuals who are kind of in this service field. So a lot of attention was paid to kind of commercial fishermen, understanding how restaurants and other kind of boots on the ground community organizations and businesses could have access to that. Because one, we know that they may be individuals who may stumble upon or come upon someone who's experiencing an overdose. But we also do know that our working class community members are in a lot of ways at heightened risk for experiencing opioid use disorder themselves. So being able to have that as a tool, not only for the general public, but for their own organizations and how to respond to their own individuals who may be struggling with opioid use disorder, has been a really big initiative. Again, there are a multitude of different organizations who are committed and excited to provide those trainings. I think one of the barriers has been these companies and businesses being willing to receive that training, but those do exist, and the county is happy to support in linking those individuals.
I imagine some people might be hesitant to stick around if they're with someone who's overdosing because there's a fear that they could be arrested, right? So does Massachusetts law protect people from arrest in these instances?
Yes, so yes, there is a Good Samaritan law that exists for individuals to kind of be protected in these situations. I would say that from a consumer perspective, the number of individuals who are unwilling to help a loved one or a friend who is experiencing an overdose has drastically decreased in the years, as well as the common kind of community seeing someone who may be experiencing an overdose and responding. We've seen an increase in just general public being willing to step up as well.
According to the National Harm Reduction Coalition, it's rare for someone to die immediately from an overdose, which means we can intervene and save someone's life. First, what are the signs that someone may have overdosed? If you're not, part of that, you don't understand the drug culture, how do we know?
Yeah, so I will start by saying that there is a ton of really beautiful, simple material that you can find online, that bullet point, what to be looking for, as well as how to respond. I would say that, like any medical event, typically what you will see for someone who is experiencing an overdose is unresponsiveness, right? So inability to wake someone up or get them, able to respond to cues. Also, what you will see in an overdose response is oftentimes lips and other areas, start to turn blue, right? Because there's a lack of oxygen when someone isn't breathing due to an overdose. So those are usually the two major indicators. Someone may identify someone who is showing signs and symptoms of getting to an overdose prior to the actual overdose happening, right? That could be kind of a nodding out. Also, again, loss of responsiveness or awareness of their surroundings. And like any medical event, then how do you respond to that is really important. So what we educate on is, number one, trying to get that person to respond to kind of audio clues or cues, my apologies, as well as some stimulation with shaking a hand or an arm to try to wake them up. If that's not working, then immediately calling 911 to begin a response is really important. And then if this person does have access to something like Narcan on their person, taking those next steps to administer Narcan, which is an intranasal spray. So it's just like taking your Flonase. You just kind of tilt that person's head back, administer the dose, and then wait for a response, while also providing rescue breathing if that's something that someone feels comfortable with.
Paul asks, what is the cost of Narcan and who bears the responsibility of financing it?
Yeah, so I love this question because I love the answer. It's free, right? So in Massachusetts, between the OENDs, which is overdose education and naloxone distribution programs, as well as community naloxone distribution programs like some health centers, we have the ability to provide this life-sustaining medication to the general public at no cost. This has been an initiative through Massachusetts Bureau of Substance Addiction Services and DPH in a way to ensure that everyone has equitable access to this reversal tool.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's shift gears and talk about the support services and programs for people who have substance use disorder. What's the most common pathway to treatment?
Yeah, so very challenging question in the sense that it truly is not one size fits all. I think that what we have seen for individuals who are experiencing any substance use disorder, but particularly opioid use disorder, is individuals building trusted relationships with their loved ones as well as treatment providers, where they feel not judged, they feel supported, and they're provided all tools and education necessary to make an educated decision on what next steps they want to take for their health and well-being. So what we see often is that folks are coming to us after many years of kind of having struggles, ups, downs, and anything in between, and are willing and ready at that point to take a next step towards their well-being. And we help to support and promote any of those steps in a positive direction. There are a ton of community providers out there who are willing and able to take individuals who are experiencing a substance use disorder.
All right, so you mentioned there's a ton of community providers, and there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So what are some of the options for people locally, and how do they assess what's the best fit?
Navigating care is one of the biggest barriers and detractors for folks getting into support and care for their substance use disorder. What I usually start with is individuals should look for a resource or an agency that is able to support them in navigating what all of those tiers are in the care continuum. Programs, again, such as AIDS Support Group of Cape Cod, all of our medication for opioid use disorder treatment programs, such as Clean Slate, Brightview, Duffy Health Center, Community Health Center of Cape Cod. The list can go on and on and on, but they not only provide medical care for substance use, but have navigators who are willing to help individuals, again, figure out what that right next step is. That is the starting point, and then being able to have a full understanding of their being, right, and what social determinants of health they may be presenting with is where the magic comes into play of figuring out what is the right fit for this particular person.
Yeah. You're sort of touching on this, but what are some of the innovative approaches to treatment, and how are these options changing the outcomes for people?
I'm going to answer that question, but I'm going to take a slight spin, Mindy,
Okay.
which I think where a lot of time and resources have been spent in the treatment world. But I think what has been really beautiful to watch blossom over the past 5 or so years is education, harm reduction, and ensuring that this is not a taboo conversation that we have, behind closed doors, and we really bring it into the general public. There has been an increased awareness campaign and destigmatization of struggling with substance use disorders, and also ensuring that children and emerging adults understand what they're facing as they may come into contact with, options or choices to use these substances in the future. That has been kind of a primary piece of the work. And then looking at treatment, increasing access to harm reduction resources, right? So syringe services, healthcare navigation, access to fentanyl test strips, Narcan, as well as xylazine test strips has been a kind of a foot in the door for individuals to build a comfort level with providers who are trusted and then can be willing and ready with arms wide open to support them if and when they'd like to take a further step in their health and wellness.
You said something earlier that I want to touch on, and that is that lack of judgment, right? Not judging people who, and that whole stigma. One of the things that a lot of folks may be hesitant is like they're in the depths of whatever, substance use they're experiencing, and it's overwhelming. And then here the people are judging. You can see where they feel helpless, like, well, what am I going to do? Right. And it makes it very difficult for them to even reach out, even though they may want to get into treatment. So I want to just, because this is, I think, such an important piece, especially for families, to try not to be judgmental.
Yes, and also recognizing, Mindy, there is, I will say this out loud because I think that this is the fence line that a lot of folks sit on, is there are negative actions that come with, struggling with mental health, substance use, and a lot of other, diagnoses that we carry day in, day out. So it's not as though some of that stigma isn't packed with lived experience and not so great relationships, right? I always pause there for a moment because I do want to call the realities of what we face when we're trying to educate and support families who are caring for someone or loving someone who is experiencing a substance use disorder. That being said, is recognizing that no one wakes up one day deciding that they want to struggle with a substance use disorder, right? We know that there are so many layers to what brings someone to that final door where their body becomes physically dependent on a drug or alcohol. A part of this is being able to understand their previous behaviors and to know that some of them were great and some of them were not so great. But to hold all of that and recognize that there is growth capacity in everyone, and being able to nurture that seedling and to watch it grow is where, the positivity comes from. So it's a really long way of me saying that being able to step back a bit, and at times, if you are that loved one who is in the heat of the moment, to connect them to someone or encourage them to connect to someone who is an unbiased party can be a real game changer for those individuals.
Right. And talk a little bit about relapse. I don't think it's common for most people to, go in treatment and get through it right away, right? Relapse is a part of the journey. And that doesn't mean that they can't get to that outcome that they want in the end, right?
That is correct. And I always tell individuals, I have tried to lose 50 pounds, I think, for the last 25 years. And I continue to have return to uses, which is not so great diet behavior, right? So I think just like anything we do in this world, we see again ebbs and flows, and it really takes time for individuals to understand what is the right blend for them that is going to support their overall recovery goals. So folks should not be dissuaded or upset if they or a loved one has a return to use. It's just an opportunity to slow it down a little bit and figure out what was working and what was not working, and to shift the plan so then that way we can hopefully see some changes to that pathway.
Just about a minute left, but what do you find are the most significant barriers to treatment for substance use disorder, and how is the public health community trying to address them?
Yeah, so looking at Cape and Islands, I think the number of resources that we have, it's limited, right? So we have a lot of outpatient providers that are working from office-based settings, but we've seen a reduction in residential programs and other longer-term treatment models that had been a huge staple to our community. So that is definitely a gap area. I also think that recognizing the landscape of our region, transportation, housing, food insecurity, all these things impact someone's ability to invest themselves into their recovery, because you have a million and one other things that you're contending with, that you're trying to do and to navigate to maintain life in general. So those are a lot of our biggest challenges. And then also, again, ensuring that there is equitable access to care for our residents, recognizing that many of our communities, especially our Outer Cape communities, don't have that immediate access like some of our kind of middle and Upper Cape communities.
We'll post more information on substance use disorder treatment options at capeandislands.org. Daniel Rodriguez is Director of Substance Use Disorder and Outreach Programs at Duffy Health. Thanks so much for your time and the work you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mindy. It's a pleasure to be able to be here to speak to the group about this topic.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.